This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek, back in warm Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr, and today I'm in Lexington, Kentucky, and you are listening to a special training episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March 18th, episode 872. This episode is brought to you by the North American Trail Ride Conference at natrc.org. Good morning, Horse World.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, welcome back, Christy.
Thanks, Glenn. How are you?
I am terrific, and you're in Lexington today. You're back at the office, huh?
I am. I am in the office today, right off of Man of War Boulevard in Hamburg in good old Lexington, Kentucky.
I think actually we must have passed each other at the airport because I flew out later in the afternoon. I think just about the time you were getting there. So, I think we must have passed each other.
That's funny. We should have stopped and said hello, and we could have gone to the airport, and had a little toddy in the afternoon before we drove home.
I know. I know. But it is nice to be back here in Ocala. We got here. We had like 4 or 5 inches of rain yesterday. So it was I went from the ice and snow there in Lexington to the torrential downpours and needing Noah's Ark here in Ocala. So it was quite a day all around. I know they had more snow in the Northeast, and we're going to be talking about trail riding today. And there's a lot of people out there that would like to get back to trail riding right now after this winter.
Oh, I bet. Absolutely. Everyone's been kind of closed in. But I'll tell you what all this rain and snow does, though, Glenn. It makes everything nice and green. Hopefully we're going to have some good hay prices this year, right?
Well, I know. And, farmers are never happy. We knew a lot of farmers when we had our farm in Pennsylvania, and they were always complaining it was too wet, it was too dry, it was too this, it was too that. And even if they had record crops, there was something wrong. I don't know. It's a farmer thing. I don't know why that is. But yeah, let's hope so, because hey, we're certainly paying enough for hay down here in Florida right now.
I think it's kind of crazy all over.
Well, Jennifer, what is coming up on today's show?
On today's special Training Tuesday edition, we go gated, and we start out with an introduction to the wide, wide world of the North American Trail Ride Conference, where gated horses, the automatic transmissions of the equine world, compete on equal ground with horses equipped with the more old-fashioned yet beloved three speeds. Next up, CHA instructor Julie Dillon stops by for a chat about the many learning and competitive opportunities for gated enthusiasts. And then rounding out the day, Teresa Musgrave guides us through gated competitive trail. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
I like that, the automatics of the trail world. That's pretty good, Jennifer. Never thought about it quite that way before. So now, do you do a lot of trail riding?
I enjoy it very much. I live, of course, most of the time near the Rocky Mountains, so I'm kind of spoiled that way. I live on the plains of Kansas, kind of where I'm situated in Aurora, Colorado, but just about a 45-minute drive from me is the good old Rockies. So my horses get some flat work, and they get some hill work, too. And when I have a moment, I love putting them in the trailer and going.
Do you, what kind of horses?
I have an Appaloosa Thoroughbred, and I've got a quarter horse.
Okay, gotcha. So now, do you? I actually, the first horse I ever rode was a gated horse. It was a Tennessee Walker. So I'm kind of partial to gated horses, and I loved riding. I didn't like riding all that much. That's why I got into driving. But when I did ride, I loved riding that horse because it was like sitting on a couch. I didn't really have to do much, and it was like an automatic.
Yeah, I loved what Jen said, too. You know, we have a lot of people that start getting hip issues and whatever, and they're like, I really don't want to sit this trot. I really don't want to post. I don't really want to do this. Can I just have a horse that just is smooth? And I've been really lucky. I've been able to ride Missouri Fox Trotters, some Tennessee Walkers, a Pasofino, a Peruvian Paso. So I've been lucky in that I've had a couple of opportunities. I even rode a Rocky Mountain. So they're all just really special horses, and I just haven't had the pleasure of owning one yet. But that's in the plans one day, I'm sure. I would love to.
Well, I'm glad we're actually talking about this today because we have a lot of listeners that ride gated horses. We have listeners that have Pasofinos. And I'm interested to talk to the Pasofino person later today. We have Teresa coming on. I'm interested to talk to her because it just seems like Pasofino, like they never get anywhere very fast. So I want to talk to her about how they work out on the trails because we have Pasofinos in the neighborhood here in our equestrian neighborhood, but they're all show horses. So they're always doing their show practice thing, and it just looks like it would take you forever to go on a trail ride. So I'm interested to hear about that. We'll know how that works.
That'll be good. I'm with you. I think that'll be great. The only time that I've ridden any of the ones that I mentioned were all in the arena kind of show-related stuff. So I also don't have that experience and background, so I'm excited for our guest today as well.
Now, Jennifer, you're saying that we had a – I don't remember that horse. Remind me of which horse you're talking about. You're saying we had a Smoky Mountain – which one
no,
was that?
When we went trail riding in the Smoky Mountains on vacation –
Oh, yes.
The horse who had the turkey land on his head?
That's right. That horse took care of me with that turkey came down and landed on his head from the tree above and didn't dump me on my butt. Yep, that was a Rocky Mountain
saddle,
horse.
Right?
I like that horse. I would have taken that one home.
I know. I tried to buy that horse when you weren't looking, and he wouldn't give it up.
I know. I wanted to take that home. Because I liked riding that horse. That horse just took care of you. And I think that's one of the things about the gated breed is they kind of do.
I would agree. I think that they're actually really, really good that way. And I don't think it matters which one. They all kind of seem. And, you know, there's, of course, good and bad in every breed. Everybody has their own personality style sometimes that comes to the forefront. But I think overall they are pretty solid citizens, which is great.
So we're gonna be talking to our guests about gated and trail riding and things like that. And I know you have done a good bit. You have to have a story or two from your time on the trail.
Oh, let me tell you one that I was thinking of that would fit well today. So we have within Certified Horsemanship Association, not only do we do our standard kind of English and Western certification, but we also do day ride trail guides for people that are just taking folks out on hour or two-hour tours. We also do an overnight where you actually learn and you are certified on your picketing, your highlining, your hobbling, things along those lines. And then we also do a let's pack into the wilderness for 5 days with the mules and the horses and bring all of our food and our supplies and our certified weed-free hay and all that good stuff. So we have those three different kinds as well. So I actually was a clinic instructor, so one of the ones doing the certifying, for a overnight. And it was near my home in Colorado, and they asked me to come in and do this clinic with another lady because it always takes two of us to do the certifying. And this was a pretty young clinic. So most of the participants were in college or right out of college, and they were going to be going to summer camps and probably being dude ranch wranglers and maybe taking people on overnight rides. So the dude ranches and the camps wanted to get them certified before the summer happened. So I am pregnant with my second. And when it came to the part of getting out of the arena and going on the trail, they said, well, Christy, we kind of have a rule that we really don't want you to ride over to the trail because of being pregnant. Is that okay if we jeep you in? And I said, sure, that's fine. So the other clinic instructor, Julia, she got all the participants together, and they all rode the horses back into where we were going to be. And I go ahead and have to get jeeped in. Well, the 19-year-old young man that jeeped me in on this rocky, rough, road, I would have been so much better off, Glenn,
you'd have been on
Jennifer,
a horse.
Had I been on a horse. Oh, my goodness. At one point, I looked at him and I said, do you really want me to have the baby here? And he's like, well, ma'am, what? His eyes got all big. He goes, what? I go, you really need to slow down, my friend. especially over the bump. He's like, sorry, babe. It was so funny. So anyways, we finally get out there, and in come everyone else, and we set up camp. So we're setting up camp, and Julie and I could tell pretty quickly that nobody in this crowd had ever done this before. So we're like, okay, we're going to be certifying them, but it's also going to be very educational. This will be great. So we get all the tents set up. We get every set thing set up. And they actually had a little cabin for us. That was really nice. So we had a little cabin with some cots. And so we got all that set up. And we're about to go to bed. And we had the participants had made the dinner. They had cleaned up. They had done all that. But they had forgotten to put the trash into the bear-proof metal container.
Oops.
So I looked at Julia, and I go, Julia, the trash. She goes, shh, let the process happen. And I said, excuse me? She goes, we need to let the process happen. I went, but this process, she's like, shh, okay. So into the cabin we go, and we turn off the lights to let the process happen. And pretty soon, something's dripping on my head. I'm like, what is dripping on my head? So I'm like, Julia, is this raining outside? She's like, there's no rain. I'm like, well, something's dripping on my head. Is there water on the roof? She goes, I don't know. I go, well, turn the lantern on. So she turns the lantern on, and there is a bat pooping on my head. Glenn and Jennifer, I kid you not. Pooping on my head right in the middle of my forehead. And you have to understand, I'm not the biggest camper in the world. Oh, yeah. So what do? I jump out of bed.
Did you do what we do? We always just pull the covers up over our heads and hope it goes away. That's our method.
You know what?
What's yours?
That's really smart. My method was not really that nice. No, my method was to jump up and down like a banshee, get a broom, and try to beat it outside of the door. So, meanwhile, the bat, of course, is flying around the room and ends up in my hair. Well, Glenn, I got a lot of hair, and my hair goes down to about my mid-back. And so, needless to say, the bat's now stuck in my hair. Oh, it was good. It was good. So now Julia is beating my head with the broom to try to get the bat out of my hair. Oh, it's lovely. So finally, the poor little creature escapes, and we get it out of my hair and out of the cabin. And we proceed to try to go back to sleep. Not even 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes later, we start hearing the bells on the horses because we had hobbled them, and there was bells on them, and we start hearing the bells disappear in the distance.
Oh, no.
Julia, I think something's going on, and she just very calmly looks at me, smiles, and says, let the process happen. So pretty soon we hear grr, 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 and in comes the bear that we knew was coming when we didn't put the trash into the metal container. And it starts tearing up camp. You can just hear it and eating the trash. And you can pretty hear soon the poor participants going, ah, bear, in their tent screaming. So pretty soon the bear does whatever the bear does, gets its food and leaves. Nobody comes out of our tent or our cabin. It leaves. So morning dawns. We wake up. And, of course, there's trash everywhere. And there's the poor participants looking all sheepish when there's no horses because they had gone home. In their hobbles, yes, horses can move in hobbles. So Julia just very calmly looked at all of them and said, so, do you think you passed or do you think you failed?
She wasn't worried about the horses, I guess. She knew where they were going to be. So.
She had a problem with that. So everyone's like, well, how are we going to get home? And she's like, well, Christy's going to jeep back, just like she got here, and the rest of us are walking the 5 miles. Go ahead, put your backpacks on, and they have to get all their stuff. And they had to walk back to camp. I was lucky.
You're lucky you didn't have the baby. You're lucky you didn't have the baby when that bat was in your hair. That was enough to.
So yeah, so they made it all home, and sure enough, there were the horses with their hobbles on, eating in the pasture very calmly, like let us in the gate. Here we are. It's all good. Oh boy.
We had one of the. I'm trying to remember her name, and I'll have it for let me think. What was her name? Erin Bolster. And Tonk. That was one of the best Wrangler stories we ever had. I don't know if she took your course or not, but she was a Wrangler up in, I forget where, up in the north someplace. And you probably remember this story. She was out on a ride with a family, and a grizzly bear went after one of the riders, a little boy.
Ooh.
The grizzly bear went after the little boy, and her and her percheron, she was riding a percheron named Tonk, actually got in front of the bear, and actually the horse chased the bear away. The horse went after the bear, and they ended up chasing the bear away. It was made national news, and she ended up on one of the morning shows. But she came on and told us the whole story, and she was a lot of fun. I wonder if she still does. She still should be doing that because she's a quick thinker and brave. I don't know if you can be certified for that.
Oh, that's just impressive. Well, the problem is we would not want to recreate that on purpose. That would be...
Yeah, true. Get a bear out, and we're going to see if you pass this test. Well, we have your first guest on the line here if you want to introduce Alice.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I have a little story before I introduce Alice. So the North American Trail Ride Conference, they are just so in line with what CHA does. We're thrilled. And I did not know that nearly as well until I actually went to their convention. They had their annual convention in Oklahoma City just a couple of weeks ago. And I was able to go as one of their keynote speakers and meet a lot of the people who do this sport. And I'll tell you, they are right in line with our mission. They believe in safety first, not only for horse and rider, but making sure that all their tack is properly adjusted and fitted, making sure the obstacles that they do are natural obstacles that you would find out on the trail, making sure that everyone who is a part of it understands trailer safety and how to actually stable your horse overnight. I mean, all of those things are judged, and I think that that's wonderful. I actually really do enjoy that horsemanship is such a big part of what they do, and it was a pleasure to meet them all in Oklahoma City. So Alice Jovich is going to be speaking today on behalf of the NATRC, and the North American Trail Ride Conference has been around for just about the same amount of time as CHA was established in the late 1960s. And Alice, I am so glad that you could be on today. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I was just saying, you know, that you guys are so much a part of what CHA does, and we're just thrilled to have the partnership with you. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about your focus of education and safety out on the trail?
Yes. The NATRC is very committed to being safe on the trail. We, a couple years ago, our local convention that we have bright yellow T-shirts that we had made up that said safety first. And so our whole regional convention theme was all about safety and even about, like, rescuing horses that had trouble out on the trail and disaster relief for horses. So it not only extends to what we are doing ourselves on the trail and keeping our riders safe, but we went a little bit further than that.
And what would you say is the difference for the listeners? Could you explain the difference between NATRC and endurance riding and trail challenges?
Absolutely. Main focus of NATRC is that any breed can compete in this, so that any horse from a draft horse to a Tennessee Walker to a pony can do this sport successfully. It is different from endurance in that it is not a race. We have a window of time for you to complete your course, but there is no racing. You can be the very last rider off the trail and still be the person who won that day. Happens quite frequently, in fact. And it is the same as endurance in that we have a vet judge who evaluates the horses multiple times through the weekend, so you know exactly how your horse is performing metabolically and you know if your horse is continuing to be sound or not. The way it is the same as a trail challenge, we have obstacles or opportunities, as we like to call them, along the way, and they're set up by the judges, sometimes the horse judge and sometimes the horsemanship judge, sometimes both, and they evaluate how the horse and rider are able to perform as a team. But the component to a trail challenge that is different is that we do have a minimum and maximum speed, so you have to go in a window, whereas with the trail challenges, it's only focused on the obstacles, and there typically isn't a vet judge involved.
Well, that makes sense. So what do you think? Can Glenn take his ponies out and do the obstacles in cart while driving them?
Unfortunately, no. It would be very interesting.
Oh, Glenn.
Oh, Jesus. You know, this sounded like my kind of thing. Optimum time, not, you know, too fast or too slow, not a lot of pressure. That sounds like my kind of thing.
Well, I mean, you know, I think, don't they have obstacle courses for driven horses? I mean, I don't drive. But it seems like I've heard of some trail challenges for ponies. And, in fact, I know our Texas Trail Challenge, that we have down here attempted to start a driving trail challenge for some of our drivers. And unfortunately, at the time, it didn't really take off, but we had a whole lot of fun trying. We had a slightly different course with a wider trail, but it was a lot of fun. Well, you know what
now,
I
is
love?
Camping required? Because camping is the thing that's kind of knocks me out there, too, because, it, you know, unless it's a hotel room with a shower, I'm kind of out of the picture.
Well, you know, the camping thing is kind of a sticky wicket, because it says in our rule book that the horses must be stabled in their like condition. And typically, they want us to be stabled with our horses. I have been told that, quote unquote, back in the day, there wasn't always a place to tie up your horse at a trailer, and that people frequently would stall their horses and everybody went to a hotel. I think now the trend is that most of the folks who do this have living quarters. When I started in 2002, there was still a pretty good group of us that came in tents, and I think there may be three of us left. I'm still one of them. I have graduated from my F-150 to a three-quarter ton Suburban, and I have a really nice setup, but I still don't have a living quarters.
Because
you
bought the
F-350, people,
that's why.
Well, yeah, but people really like, that's true. Yeah. Well, it's used. It's pretty, very used. But people really like to camp, it seems like, that do this. We have one-day rides, and sometimes people who live close and want to try the sport will show up on Saturday morning and do the ride and then check out on Saturday evening and kind of avoid camping. But questionable whether or not that's technically okay in the rule book, because the judge, the horsemanship judge, will judge stabling to make sure the horses are stabled safely. And all that really happens in that situation is the rider might lose his stabling points because he wasn't there for stabling check.
So I always agree you, Ben, on these things, Alice. I loved how you called the obstacles opportunities. So let's share a little bit more about the opportunities.
Yeah, I like that too, actually. I picked up on that too.
What are some of the opportunities that I might face if I go out on the trail
you
with
have,
my horse?
I love that. That's like saying you have the opportunity to be dumped on your butt. That's what's going to happen when you get to that opportunity. You have the opportunity to eat dirt. We're going to give you that opportunity. Go ahead.
Well, the opportunities might be completely not, you know, we try to base them in the terrain that is available. So, as a rule, unless you're just somewhere that's super flat, sandy, and has no trees, the judges will always find something that they can turn into an opportunity. We get judged on our uphills and our downhills. Like creek crossings. Maybe they'll have us back through some trees, either in hand or mounted. They'll judge us doing like a transition, like from a downhill to an uphill, to see if we're light and balanced in the saddle. Because as you're going down the hill, you know, you don't want a man from Snowy River it. You know, you don't want to be leaning way back on your horse's butt. You want to be centered and perpendicular to trees, if there are any. And then going back up the next hill, you want to bring your center of gravity forward so you're up out of the saddle so that you can help your horse navigate the terrain.
I love that you're perpendicular to the trees. That gives me a good visual.
I don't mean perpendicular. Dylan. Geez, I meant parallel. I meant parallel. My geometry is not working this morning. Parallel
to
the trees.
Yeah, I was picturing perpendicular
parallel
and nothing about
trees.
It was good.
No, parallel to the trees. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh,
that would be after Glenn's opportunity where you fall off.
That's right. Well, you know, we really try very hard. You know, one thing I should emphasize is that if there is any obstacle that you feel unsafe completing, you should absolutely not do it. In one of my first rides, I know that my mare just did not feel like we should be doing some of the steeper downhills and things, and we passed. We just went around the obstacle, went on down the trail, and we still placed it that ride. 15% of the card is based on trail ability and on the horse card. So the horse can still perform and place, even if you feel like you need to pass one of the obstacles or just even don't do very well. You can still be very successful.
Is this for all ages of horses and riders, or is there minimum and maximum ages?
You have to be a minimum of 10 years old, but unlike AERC, Once you're 10, you can go do it. Like, if you don't have a parent that rides, you know, it's always best to find an adult. Most of us don't want to turn our 10-year-old loose on the trail. But you don't have to have a sponsor once you're the minimum age. And we have people who are competing in their 70s, possibly older. I know of people in their 70s currently that are competing.
And how about horse ages?
The horse has to be a minimum of 4 years old for the novice and the competitive pleasure division, and they have to be a minimum of 5 years old for the open division.
And what are your minimum and maximums as far as distance that the horse has to go?
For the novice and competitive pleasure division, they will go between 30 and 40 miles over a two-day period, and the speed is typically 3.5 to 4.5 miles per hour, though there are exceptions in the speed to compensate for difficulty of terrain. So the open division, you're going to go up.
This is really endurance ride distance then, huh?
I don't know. It doesn't seem like it. It's 30 miles minimum over 2 days as opposed to 30 miles all at one time.
Well, all at one time. Okay.
And the speed is substantially slower. As an endurance, you have to go about 5.5 miles an hour to make your times, you make your cutoff time. And we're only going an average of about 4 miles an hour, which, you think about it, that's what a person would walk the trail.
Right.
So, you know, it's mostly walking and a little bit of trotting. So, and then, say, in the open division, you'll do 50 to 60 miles in the weekend and a 5 to 6 mile an hour pace.
So, Alice, how do listeners find you? How do they find rides near them? Are they all over the country? Are they only in certain areas? How does that work?
Well, there are parts of the country that have more than others, but they are everywhere. The website is natrc.org, and from there, they can look at the map to see what region they're in. Like, I'm in Texas, and that's Region 4. So we're Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Arkansas. And then Region 6 is kind of the Midwest. Region 5 tends to be most of the East Coast. And then Region 1 and 2 are the West Coast. Region 3 is Colorado, New Mexico, that area.
And do you have to sign up for the ride ahead of time, or you just show up?
It is always better to sign up ahead. We have a system for that that they can access from the website. But you can just show up, especially these days. We are really trying to build our membership. Back in the early, you know, like 02, 03, we would typically have rides that were full with waiting lists. And right now, we're experiencing a little bit of a slowdown. So people do show up and are able to get into the rides. But it's just better for the secretary and the officials to have their information ahead of time.
And
we
do you crown a national champion? Do you crown a national champion?
Yes. There is an award called the President's Cup that is the highest honor that you can win in NATRC. It is when an open rider completes 16 rides, it's the person who has the most horse points. So it's a maximum of 16 rides. So, you know, you do your 16 rides, and most of the people that are attempting to complete that award will do 16 rides, because I don't think you can have enough points for it to win it if you don't. That's typically considered our national champion. But there are other awards also at the national level, such as, like, high average horsemanship. My daughter was high average junior horse average in 2012 for the juniors. They have the open division and the competitive pleasure division place a top six, and there are many other special awards that's, you know, for at the national level. And then all the regions also award their novice riders.
I do see, too, I'm looking at your website here, and I see that who won last year was Ken Wolgram on Awesome Fire and Ice, which I kind of like that name. What kind of horses do we see? Do we see a little bit of everything? I know, you know, like in endurance, we see mostly Arabs, but here it looks like a little bit of everything.
You do see a lot of everything. I think if you would study if you looked at the President's Cup list, I haven't counted them up, but it seems like Foxtrotters seem to win it often. Johnny Jewell, who was on your show a while back, won with her Arab Hank. there's some of the earliest President Cup winners was the Saddlebred. Every breed is represented. Later, you know, there's Pasofinos. I don't think any Pasofinos have ever won the President's Cup, but a friend of mine who is going to be on the show later has been riding her Pasofino and kind of changing people's minds about their trail suitability.
Very good. I'll tell
you too, Glenn, when I went to their convention, boy, are their awards nice. They really do a good job of giving really quality awards. No, I was sitting there at the awards banquet going, wow, this is good. This isn't just some cheesy ribbon that goes on the wall. And you know what's so funny about ribbons? You know, the only one out of blue, red, yellow, white, pink, and green, all those numbers, right? The only one that changes over time is blue. It becomes purple. And
yeah, that's
blue
true.
Being
You're
first
right.
Place, that means something, doesn't it? Right? I think that there's some sort of a moral there that we've got to write something about, but it's too early in the morning for me for that. But yes, I think that's funny. Funny but true. But yeah, the awards were amazing.
Well,
thank you so much for
joining us, Alice. We appreciate you being here. It's the natrc.org, natrc.org. That's where you can find all the information. I was just on there looking what rides are down in the Florida area, and there you're right. There appears to be rides all over the country, so try and find one near you. And now, one of the things that we talk about on our Endurance Day here that we do with Karen Chatton is, you know, we talk about how to get started, and one of the things she recommends is coming out and volunteering for a ride, for a show, before you get started, so you can see how it all works. Would you recommend the same thing?
Absolutely. And I know that I'm putting on a ride May 3rd and 4th in Athens, Texas, and I've been encouraging people to come and volunteer, you know, all the time. And I know every ride manager would appreciate volunteers because we can never have too many.
Well, and I know you learn a lot, too, you know, by being there. You just learn how it all works before you go out there and attempt to do it yourself. So,
yes,
especially
true.
If you have no idea and if you've never seen one.
I went to my first ride intending to volunteer and ended up entering. And I would have been better off if I had volunteered first, I think. But I survived, and I'm still here. And, I mean, I was completely hooked after the very first ride.
Thank you, Alice. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Bye, Alice.
Bye.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I think a lot of our listeners probably aren't familiar with this. I was not totally familiar with what they do. I knew they existed, but, you know, it's one of those things to kind of know they exist but don't know exactly what they do. So that was interesting.
It's kind of a combination of different things, right? And they've been around a long time, and I just think that their focus on horsemanship and horse care and the safety involved is just huge. So I just really appreciate them for that.
Just have to get past that camping part. All right, our next
obviously
guest is ready.
Obviously, me too. All right. Well, this is Julie Dillon, and I am thrilled to have her on. Julie and I have known each other for a long time through Certified Horsemanship Association. She is one of our certified instructors, and she and I first met at one of our CHA conferences. She came and did a talk to our clinic staff on gated horses. You know, often we have to be, as clinic staff, a jack of all trades and master of nothing in order to go and do these certifications around the country, because we're going to end up with who knows what type of person that comes to these clinics to get certified. Some of them might be just a one breed person only, and it might be a certain gated breed. And if we've never heard of that breed or don't understand the gates of that breed or what have you, we can look kind of ignorant. So Julie came to share with us on gated horses, and she's an expert, and it was a thrill to have her. So we are thrilled to have her on today to chat with us a little bit more in detail about gated horses. So hi, Julie.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me.
I am so excited you could be on today. And go ahead and do me a favor. Share just with us for a minute or so a little bit about your background in the gated world and CHA and those types of things.
I love teaching, and my focus has been on adults that are either learning for the first time or returning to riding. The gated breeds I discovered about 25 years ago as my children were born, and I could not believe the difference. But, of course, there was much to learn. So I was in Oklahoma teaching camping and riding with your gated horse. And then a move caused us to head to New Hampshire. And since then, I have been studying different types of gated horses and promoting dressage principles to improve the safety and the flexibility of your trail horse. And I love teaching adults. Watching them discover a gated horse is like watching a Christmas tree light up.
I love that. They're saying, wow, this is smooth. I don't bounce. Some of them cry.
That was my favorite. That was my favorite part.
I love it. And, you know, people don't really understand and until I say, gated horses make all four cheeks smile.
That is good. You even cried about that one.
You know, prior to the 17th century, most of the world's horses were naturally gated, and horses that trotted were called bone shakers back then.
I've been on one of those before, or
aww,
two.
Jennifer,
you
that's your title for the show today, by the way. There's
cheeky
your title for
the show. Cheeky smiles right there.
It's going
to
be on
what
the website.
What else would you like to know?
Well, I have a question for you that wasn't on my list that I was going to tell you, so I'm just going to throw this out there because I'm curious, and if you don't know the answer, you can tell me. I don't know the answer, and we'll look later. But, you know, my quarter horse has gaits. It's walk, trot, canter, jog, lope, whatever the case may be. Why are gated horses called gated?
They are called gated, you know, because we know that gait refers to footfall of any critter. And, you know, now some robots. But the gait that we consider smooth-gated is one that transfers the weight to the foot or feet on the ground. The smoothest-gated horses have 2- and 3-foot weight-bearing sequences. Amblers, or single-foot, as we call single-foot horses, have a single foot on the ground. So there is a spectrum of gait that occur in our what we consider smooth-gated horses. There is a mutation that's been recently discovered in 2012. There is actually a gene for all of our technical folks, and it's called DMRT3. And if you read the articles, there's lots of information out there about the scientific reasons that they gate.
So I want to know then, give me some types of gated horses and the names of some of their gaits that you know of.
We're going to make this really easy. And everyone listening is going to be able to understand. I had to figure this out myself, so that's why I learned to explain it. Now, everyone understands the engine is in the back. Are we in agreement?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So the walking horse is known for his flat walk. Now, other gated horses also do a flat walk. But if a horse is doing a flat walk, he is walking in back and either trotting in the flat walk or running in the running walk in front. So the walking horse walks in back and trots in front in the flat walk, and he walks in back and runs in front in the running walk. So the foxtrot, which is what is the Missouri foxtrotter is known for, what do you think he does in back? He trots in back and walks in front.
He's opposite.
Yes, because we have laterally gated horses, which walk in back, and diagonally gated horses that trot in back. Because the walk is a lateral gait, the trot is a diagonal gait. So if a gated horse, by the naked eye, is walking in back, you know pretty well he's doing a flat walk. And if by the naked eye, you see he's going faster in back and slower in front. He is doing a foxtrot. Now, this is the hard part. There are multiple versions of the lateral and diagonal smooth gaits. And this is where it gets complicated. A walking horse, a lot of them, can do a beautiful foxtrot. And I personally have a foxtrotter that nods his head like an oil rig while he's doing the flat walk. The head nod is another way to tell. The flat walking horse nods his head, like I said, like an oil rig because he's moving his head in cadence with his back legs because he has to reach walking in back. The foxtrotter has the cutest little undulating head nod. It's almost like he's nodding in agreement. And it undulates all the way from his nose all the way back down to his tail. And it's a lot of fun to ride because it feels like a rumba.
That would be fun. I've never rumbaed before.
It is so much fun. Now, if you like a long-legged, riding thoroughbred, and you're going to go to gated, you probably will enjoy the walking horses because they have this long, lilting movement that goes from back to front, and it feels more like a waltz. So depending on if you're a waltzing person or a rumba person, you might find a feeling of familiarity. Your little quarter horse, Christy, probably does an amble. A lot of quarter horses do. Now, it really gets complicated from here. Am I doing okay?
You're doing great. I'm getting a visual. How about you, Glenn? Are you getting a visual?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Now I'm going to blow it all up. I kind of have an idea. Okay, you're going to make it, you know, now you're going to make it complicated.
Uh-huh. I'm going to blow it all up. 10% of gated horses have DNA that makes them prone to trot. And 10% of the what we consider trotting non-gated horses are born with a four-beat lick that could challenge any other horse bred to gate. So it's all about how does the DNA fall, how does the conformation develop, and what individual talent and ability each foal is born with.
So how do I know then, if I have a gated horse, how do I know the cues to get the horse to do the gates? Are the cues very different from how to get a horse to trot or canter? How does that work?
It's the same, the same, the same, the same. These horses have as inherent a propensity to 1, 2, and 3 foot weight-bearing sequence as a trotting horse has for that beautiful 2-beat trot with suspension. So if you bring your horse along with classic training, my foxtrotter was trained by a Western reiner or in a Western pleasure. He went to a couple of different places in his youth. So if you've got talent to train a horse and you're an excellent rider, it'll take me about 20 seconds to show you how to see where your brake, where your clutch, and where your gas is on a gated horse. If the horse is well gated and trained, training one, same principles as training a trotting horse, but there's one big difference. Every time you ride that gated baby, you need to count to 4 and teach him and encourage him to find out where his legs are and find his natural ability under weight. That's the key.
So what are some, Julie, then, if I have a gated horse, what are some arena patterns? If I have an arena, that I want to do to maintain that gate and get that gate going before I go out on the trail and do some things? Do you have some specific exercises for our listeners in regards to that?
Yes, ma'am. I like to do what I call a cowboy shoulder in, which is the shoulder in is, I think, what supples our horses and allows them to feel loose and gymnasticized. I think that's a big word, but it's the one that works for me. But the cowboy shoulder in is a spiral in. You start on a 20-meter circle and bring it in about 18 inches, smaller and smaller and smaller. Get to the middle and go back out. And if you do that on the right and the left rein, just once or twice, and there are other exercises. I mean, the shoulder in itself, the leg yield. And you really only need to warm your horse up for 10, 15 minutes at the most. Poles, which can also be trees, riding him from back to front, cueing him with your hips. And you do need soft contact with your gated horses just as you would any other horse, so you don't want to throw him on his face. There's something else that a lot of folks don't realize. You don't need to let – you need to make certain that you don't ride him outside his head nod. That head nod is what indicates that he's loose, he's comfortable. And if you can count to four and you can watch that head nod go in cadence, well, your bottom will tell you you're in the right place. But that's another indication to know that he is finding his perfect gait and rhythm.
So to be able to get that head nod, is there any particular type of bit? Can I do this in a hackamore? Can I do this in a Bozell? Do I have to always have some sort of a shanked bit? How does that work?
I think it really depends on the training of the horse. If the horse has been trained in a snaffle, you need to know that. If the horse has been trained in a shank and a curb, and he's new to you, you may need to use that bit just to begin to lighten the equipment in sequence. So if you are prone to what to use a snaffle and your horse is in a shank, you've got to speak shank language and gradually get him to the snaffle. My little fox trotter, I'm very, very fortunate, was trained on a snaffle. And when we go on the trail, I have one particular snaffle that I like. And when we go in the show ring, we use a different one. I have older horses that were trained on huge bits that I now use the 5-inch miler with a loose curb. And when they go in the show ring, they can now go on a snaffle. But I bought them as 10-year-olds. So if I have a 10-year-old gated horse that's on an 8-inch shank with a solid port, I've got to give him time to understand what the snaffle means before I ever take him on the trail. And my boys are 20 and 23, my older horses. I still put the shortest, mildest shank and softest curb, and that's what we go out on the trail with. So it's all about safety and understanding bidding sequencing. So, and
absolutely. So I have a question for you then. So if you're in the show arena, traditionally, especially in dressage, which is your sport, you don't want a whole lot of head movement. So if you're going into a competition that's open and it's open to all breeds, do you have a lot of judges that understand that the nod is actually a good thing and that the horse needs to be nodding in order to be doing his job correctly?
Well, when we started in 07, they really didn't understand gait. And I was asked to approach the judge. And at that time, the judge would ask me, okay, show me what the flat walk looks like. And fortunately, my horse does a textbook breed standard flat walk. And I would say, this is my medium gait. This is what my horse does in place of the two-beat diagonal trot. And then she would say, okay, show me your canter. And I said, my canter should look just like that of the trotting breeds. So we still have to have jump in our and round, beautiful three-beat canter. And the judge always asks me, well, what should I do? And I say, please, judge us in this very same way you would my trotting competitors by the basis of the training scale. So we still go in and do our very, very best to be above reproach, come in with perfect rhythm and relaxation, and get the bend and make it as easy for the judges to understand as we
can. Okay, but all right, so that's what you tell them to do. What do they actually do?
What do you mean? The judges?
I mean, how does it end up looking on the scorecard?
Do you really want me to answer that? Okay, this is what happens. You go into competition in dressage, and I never imagined when I left Oklahoma I would ever, ever step hoof inside a dressage arena. It just happened. The first year, I took the ace man. He was 21. We competed in intro division open series. We won high point year end, and we rode for 8 different judges. 2008, Levi competed in 2 different open dressage series. We were the only gated horse in Massachusetts and one in New Hampshire. Levi won high point year-end champion training level against trotting horses, 5 different judges. And in New Hampshire, he won reserve, again, with 5 different judges from, you know, different parts of the New England territory. And so it goes. We have been treated graciously. And since 2008, one or more gated horse in the New England area has won at least a reserve or a championship against our trotting competitors. And we are very grateful. We are
That's terrific.
It's an exciting development, and the dressage discipline is thrilling. And now folks in the trotting world that love dressage can pursue their dressage dreams on a gated horse.
And I'm sure it gets the attention of all the spectators too. Anybody that's there is watching you to see what happens.
Well, recently, because Levi won at first level year before last, I don't show him anymore. He's 26, and last summer, just for fun, because he is such a joy to ride, we went in and we did, just for fun, a training level test, and in a field of 8 at the University of New Hampshire, open dressage series for New England Dressage Association. In a field of 8, he took 3rd.
Good boy.
And everybody knew, you know, and it was just, I just felt like queen for a day. And I know it sounds like bragging, but let me tell you what, these guys are, they have so much heart. And just like the non-trotting breeds, we do have gated horses that would, you know, rather eat a bee than go in a dressage arena. But the boys, the horses that I have seen are just so wonderful. And they know when they've won. You know,
they get that confidence. That's right.
And do you think that Western dressage is going to be something that gated breeds are going to have success at as well?
I think so. I think gated and non-gated breeds are going to have great success, and it's so wonderful because so many folks are not comfortable in that funny-looking saddle. And those white breeches are extremely unforgiving. Trust me, I know. and so our trail riders, and, you know, as a trail rider, I remember being on the other side of the fence going, well, dressage, what does it have for me? But when I started reading the test, I realized, hey, this is a roadmap. This is so exciting. This is how I can not only train my horse, but myself to be ever more competent, supple. And it also gives us a way to know when it's fair to ask for more and when it's time to maybe go back a step, you know, to know when is fair, when is kind, when is appropriate, and also to be able to gauge a horse and rider as an instructor and to be able to show that team, okay, let's read these tests. This is what you have. You have a nice halt. You have a trot or a flat walk. You can do a 20-meter circle and keep the bend. You're intro level. And so it goes up the scale of these beautifully designed exercises.
Well, Julie, we are running out of time here. Well, we've run out of time. You have to do the talking because if you don't talk, then we have to. So it makes our job easier when you actually talk. So, no, that's terrific. What's the website, though, that people can find you?
Oh, it's horsefeathersnh.com.
And you're in New Hampshire?
I am. I'm in New England. New Hampshire is kind of in the middle.
Okay, yep. Yep, okay, so it's horsefeathersnh.com. Thank you for joining us, Julie. We really appreciate it.
It was so nice to be included. Thank you so much for having me.
Bye, Julie.
Well, we're going to go from gated dressage over to talking about Pasifinos, and we don't do that very often on the show. I'm not sure why, but we just haven't had the opportunity, and I know we have a lot of listeners that have Pasifinos, so this is for you guys. But first, we're going to have to hear a song, and I know that Patty Hall, who sings Settle Down Cinderella, that's coming up, actually rides some gated horses in the West. So that's one of the reasons I picked this song. It's Settle Down Cinderella by Patty Hall. We're going to be back right after this to talk more about gated trail horses.
Friday night and the phone won't ring. You let it get you so blue. You're climbing the walls of your pink bedroom. Feels like the world's leaving you behind.
Take you away.
Well, that was Patty Hall with Settle Down Cinderella. Patty's a cowgirl from the West Coast. You can find all of her music at pattyhall.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek, and we are here with Christy, who is from the Certified Horsemanship Association, and we're talking about trail horses today and about gated horses. Christy, do you know, are standard breds considered gated horses?
Standard breds, you know?
I would have to ask a gated expert.
They do pace, so I wonder if that means that pacers, because they don't trot, that they would be gated. I would think, based on Julie's description she just gave us, that yes.
See, that's what I was thinking, too. I was thinking the way she said that. You know, I don't know that I hear them referred to as gated horses a lot, but I guess they would be. That's just, I don't know. Interesting.
That's a really good question.
We'll
it was so much fun to have you say the comment that you said right before we went to the music break, because, you know, we are so happy with Certified Horsemanship Association and how we welcome all breeds and all disciplines, and even within the breed, all the different things that you can do, right? So we had Julie talking mainly about her dressage world and all those things that she's done, and of course she also did trail back in the day too, and now we're going to go on to Teresa, who is primarily all about trail for her, and that's just great, and we just love that we're able to be able to do that, and it's fun with these different breeds, how we can do so much with them. The horse world is just cool, Glenn. That's all I'm saying. It's cool.
It is cool. It is cool. Jennifer's having a little bit of trouble getting Julie on, or Teresa, our next guest, on, so she's working on that right now.
Okay.
What's your – if you had a favorite thing that you do – now, obviously, because you're with the Certified Horsemanship Association, you do a lot of different things. But if you had a favorite thing personally that you do, is it trail riding? Is it competing? You know, what's your favorite thing? Is it just hanging out with the horses in the backyard?
You're going to laugh.
Okay.
I like Gymkhana events. I love Gymkhana.
Oh, really?
I think it's the ingrained 12-year-old in me.
It's the pony clubber in you coming out.
You know, there is nothing better than pole bending, which is basically a series of tempi changes, isn't it?
That's true.
I love
that
a good
true.
Pole bending pattern. I just love it.
All right. Well, I'm going to get the egg and the spoon out too, okay?
Okay. Well, that's always fun too. We can do ribbon raise, dollar bill, bring them all, Glenn. I am ready. I love that.
I want to try – I don't know if my Hackney Pony would put up with this, because I don't think Hackney Ponies really like to put up with this, but we'll find out. He's pretty good about everything so far. I want to try mounted – I want to try driven shooting, because you can't call it mounted shooting.
My.
But there's actually now starting up – there are groups around the country. I know we have a friend out in Colorado by the name of Minnie Sarah, who actually drives her Mini and does shooting patterns with her Mini and starting to put shows together where you do driven shooting. I think that'd be fun.
I think that would be great. Because you know what? We were talking earlier about the driving out on the trail, and of course that's combined driving, right? And there's just all kinds of really neat things with combined driving. It'd be fun to add a shooting event with combined driving. Oh, my. That would be fun to watch.
Would be fun.
Please compete. I will come watch you.
I'm kind of afraid about one thing, shooting my horse in the butt. That's one thing. Or taking the top of his ear off. That's another thing. You realize they're only shooting black powder, but you know that black powder does travel for a distance. That's why the balloon pops, 10 feet away. That could be interesting. That could make it very exciting. But, yeah, I would love to try that sometime. It would be a blast. I'll have to see how my Hackney Pony puts up with that.
But that's just it, right? There's so many things that we can do, and it's just so much fun. And that just shows you, just less, and I always think about this, Glenn, and it fascinates me, just less than 100 and some odd years ago, we were all using horses as modes of transportation. Everybody was a quote-unquote horse person. You had to be. There was no other way.
I just posted a picture from – I love these pictures, and I look for them all the time. But I just posted a picture on the Driving Radio Show Facebook page, and it was of this mule, this huge mule, a very fit, huge mule. It was from 1889 in San Diego, California, and this one mule was pulling the trolley car, with probably 20 people in it. And, that we do sometimes forget that is how everything happened back in the late, in the 1800s, 1700s, 1800s, and on back earlier than that. Everything happened by horse. So there's this trolley car being pulled on hilly roads. And, I realize it was on rail, so it's a little easier to pull. But, my gosh, that's what it was all about.
Absolutely it was. So you think about it, they had to do everything, right? They had to work in the field, and they had to be able to drive the person or carry the person to the store, to the neighbor's house, to church, to whatever the case may be. And then you had those, of course, that were in war. And those war horses, talk about dressage, they weren't 100% leg trained because you had a sword in each hand and you were coming after your enemy. So you had to do everything with leg and seat, to spin them on their haunches and get the people coming at you from the forehand and the haunches. I mean, pretty amazing.
Yeah, it definitely was. Jennifer's still working on it, Christy.
Okay.
We were having a little bit of trouble, I think, with our switchboard. We had a little trouble with it yesterday, too. I don't know if she's getting through or not at this point.
Well, I'll have to go ahead and also try your email, Glenn, because I have another lady who's wonderful, who's actually from Seattle, Washington. She's currently in Florida, so I was going to have her actually go on a totally different show in the future because she's in Florida. But she was like, I'm available if you need me in the morning. She's a very good lady, and she's been part of CHA for a long time and has ridden lots and lots of gated horses in the past. And her name is
okay,
Patty.
If you could drop me her information, then I can get a hold of her.
Absolutely.
We can have Jennifer try. Now the other thing too, I wanted to talk a little bit is the Certified Horsemanship Association has. You're really starting now that the snow is melting. Hopefully, a little bit. You're really starting to get things together and starting to go in. Full force to the spring with all of your with all of the training and everything that's going on. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Much like NATRC rides are all over, CHA clinics are all over as well. We have them in all 50 states and right now even almost every province in Canada. We even have one coming up in Nova Scotia for those that want to go see Nova Scotia. But we have them everywhere, and the best place to find those is on our website, which is CHA-AHSE.org, and you go under clinics by location or date, and they all come up, and we're adding them daily at this point. But they range everything from that day ride trail guide certification that I told you about, that's a 2.5-day clinic, to our full-blown standard or, English and Western Arena one, or the pack out in the trail in the wilderness, 5 days. And so you can range from 2.5 days to 5 days, including barn manager certification for those people that do not feel like they want to get on the back of a horse. And we also do, Glenn, just for you, have a driving certification. So, and we do two in hand as well as single for that. So that's a really fun one as well.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, we do vaulting too, recreational vaulting. We have those folks for the people that want to try that, either the recreational level or even up to the competitive level in vaulting. So a wide variety of things to kind of learn about and then go and get certified in to be able to go and teach it to others.
Okay. Well, I didn't know about the driving thing. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's relatively new for us. It's only a couple of years old now. And, we found that a lot of our program members, based on where they lived in the country, they were coming in and they were having their summer camps. And it's so much fun to do different types of disciplines during the week with your kids that come to horse camp. And a lot of them had a good pony or maybe a draft horse or something in between that they were driving. And they said, gosh, it would be really great to teach some of these kids how to do the driving. So they go ahead and they put one up in a cart with them, and away they go. And, as you well know, a lot of your driving basics are very similar to riding basics as far as, the rein aids and being able to weight, distribute within the cart and things. And I know I have learned so much about driving just from the concept of putting on the harness and taking it off. I didn't know much about any of that, and I have learned quite a bit. I'm definitely no expert like you probably are, Glenn, but I am learning, and it's really fun. So, once again, just anything you can do with a horse, there's knowledge to be found at it, and we just go to our team of experts. I always say I am not the experts. I just know where all the experts are, and I go try to find them. That's my job.
There you go. Well, Teresa is here. Jennifer's managed to get her on here. So we can,
that's wonderful.
We can go to our next guest. Yep.
Absolutely. Well, Teresa, hi. A pleasure to have you on. And before we start, what I would love to have you do, if you don't mind, could you give us about a one-minute background on you and your writing with NATRC and with your Pasofinos, please?
Oh, certainly. First off, good morning. I have been writing with NATRAC for, I believe, about 10 years. I grew up with horses. Grew up on a children's ranch and had horses, but then whenever I got older, I went into the Pasofinos. I tried some different gated breeds and settled on the Pasofinos, and the NATRAC was just a wonderful venue for me to work with my horses. The Pasofinos that I've ridden four different Pasofinos on NATRAC rides, and the last 2 years I've ridden the Pasofinos I've ridden have been the National NATRAC Pasofino for the year. So I've had several different Pasofinos that I've ridden in NATRAC and been pretty successful with them.
So you've won a couple of those fancy awards that I saw when I was at their convention a couple of weeks ago.
I did.
Congratulations. Yes. So, Teresa, I would love to talk to you, and I know Glenn has a couple of questions for you, too, that he's going to ask here in a bit, but you know, I was asked a lot at different places where I go and speak, and I don't really know the answer to this, and I would love, as a riding instructor, to know the answer to this. If I am out on the trail and I am on a horse that gates, can I have them do their gait without my seat aid, meaning that if I'm up in my stirrups, I'm in kind of a two-point position or a hover position or half-seat type of thing, so I'm off of my horse's back, either if I'm going long distances and want to not sore his back or if I'm going uphill, can I still get my horse to stay in its particular gait, much like I do a trotting horse, without my seat aid?
Really pretty difficult. The problem that we've got there is that the impulsion for the gait comes from the rear, from the hindquarters. And when you two-point, you not only do you lift your center of gravity up, but you also move it forward, putting more emphasis on the front of the horse. And so that's going to make it more difficult for them to actually balance and gait. It is possible to do kind of raise yourself up out of the stirrups a little bit, but you still need to keep your body mass further to the back. The most important thing on the horse as far as soaring the back is really balance. It's not so much getting up out of the saddle as it is making sure you ride balanced. If I'm going over real tricky sections of the trail, I will slow the horse down, but I would do that even if I was riding a trotting horse. So I really don't recommend trying to two-point on a gated horse. Because when you do lift yourself up, you raise that center of gravity, and you move it forward, and that's going to make it more difficult for them to gait and to carry you easily.
That makes absolute sense. So kind of then my next question is, much like we were talking to Julie, who was the guest on earlier, and she rides her gated horses in the dressage world, and we were asking her, you know, how do judges compare your gated horses to their trotting counterparts? Well, obviously, when we had Alice on, we were talking a lot about NATRC rides and how you have horsemanship judges at each obstacle. So do those horsemanship judges understand that you might not be going into two-point as much on a gated horse, and do they judge you accordingly?
I believe they do. I've never felt like I was marked down because of the differences in the way that I ride with my horse. Usually, most of the obstacles that we're being observed on are some that you would walk through anyway. We don't normally have too many observations where we are going at any speed. And so in that point, like if I'm going up a steep hill, I am going to get up out of the saddle. You know, but I'm going to be at a walk. I'm not going to be gating. Hello?
Oh, I think we might have actually lost Christy. I think we might have lost Christy there for a minute. Let's see. Christy, are you
she
back?
She said enough was enough,
I
and
am.
She's gone riding. There she is.
Yeah, you know what? I am back. I don't know what happened. You know, welcome to the world of drop calls. I was telling someone the other day it used to be rude to hang up on people, and now it's just par for the course, right?
Right, exactly.
It is.
Teresa, on that vein, talking about impulsion and moving forward and going someplace, my question with the Pasofino, we live in a equestrian neighborhood, and there's actually a lot of Pasofinos in the neighborhood, mostly, from what I can tell, they're show horses, and they practice on the planks and the whole thing.
Yes.
It just never seems like they're going anywhere very fast. So as a trail horse, does it, like, take you 10 times as long as everybody else to get where you're going?
Well, that's an excellent question. It kind of leads to the deal of, are all Pasofinos exactly the same? And they're not. They're, you know, the Pasofinos have different gaits, and they do them at different speeds. You've got the Fino Pasos that do the very, very, very rapid short step, and they can take 10 or 15 minutes to get around an arena. Then you've got the...
And they're the ones I think we see that are doing the plank work here, right? The ones that are... They look like the dancers.
For the most part, they go down the Fino board, and everybody's listening for that dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum to hear that four-beat gait. Now, all of the Pasos have the four-beat gait. The difference in the gaits, though, are in how much extension there is and how much ground you cover. The horse that I am riding now has an excellent largo gait. That's the most extended one. And his largo gait is as fast as a canter. I've ridden with Alice before with her horses cantering, and I'm at a largo beside her at the same speed. So it depends on your Paso's particular gifts and what you ask it to do. For a trail horse, I'm not interested in that Fino gait. That's way too slow. It's beautiful to watch, and it's completely natural. The horses do it on their own. It's not anything that's created by man. But it's also pretty unnecessary on the trail.
Inefficient.
Pretty useless on the trail.
But inefficient.
Yes, very inefficient.
Yeah.
Very
well, okay, that explains it. I didn't realize there were different types of pathos, and that kind of explains, that makes sense now. Otherwise, I was just picturing you coming in 3 hours after everybody else that you went out with, you know, needing to pack a lunch, you know. So, good. All right.
Okay. Well, with me, I pack a lunch anyway. I'm always hungry.
Now, are the Pasos, do you guys also carry, I got to know this, do you guys also carry a flask like the Fox Hunters, or is that not happening in the Paso world?
Nope, haven't done that. I may keep that in mind, though.
Yeah, you know, the Fox Hunters, you know, they have a good time out there, I'm just saying.
Now, Teresa, I know that Glenn has a lot of listeners on the call today that were very interested in the Pasos. Could you please tell us all the different gaits and the names for them that the Paso does?
Well, the first one that I mentioned was the Paso Fino. It's the fine step, and it is the very fastest, shortest step. And these are the ones that are really just used for show. The ones that do the Paso Fino, they also do the other gaits. They will walk, they will gallop and everything else. But the Paso Fino itself that they do in the show is the really short, short step. Then you have the Paso Corto. It has the same footfall. In fact, all of the footfalls are the same as a walk, actually. But the difference is in the amount of extension and the speed of the footfall, how rapidly the feet actually hit the ground. So the next one from the Paso Fino is Paso Corto. It's their intermediate gait. And it's about the same speed usually as a trot. And then after the Paso Corto, you go on to the Paso Largo, which is the most extended gait, and it's the ground-covering one that's going to be either like a fast trot or a canter. And then the horses also can be taught to canter, or will canter as well. If you do want to canter your Paso Fino, it's best not to go from a gait into the canter, however, because when you do that, you tend to teach them to canter more so than the gait, and you shorten up their gait. So when you canter a Paso Fino, or really any gaited breed, it's best to get into the canter from a walk or from a standstill, but not go from your gait into your canter.
That makes sense. And I know we teach a lot when you go from canter from a non-gated horse. We always say, you know, you can do it from the walk or the trot or the halt. But if you do it at a trot, you don't want to do it at one of those ridiculously fast trots where you just kick, kick, kick until it goes in. You have to be collected and back on their haunches, again, where the motor is. So you do it all from a really slow sitting trot. You would never want to do it from a fast posting trot just because of those kind of differentiations of how they're going to move at canter if you start to do that. So that
exactly
makes sense.
Switching from the 2-beat to the 3-beat or 4-beat to 3-beat in the case of the Apostolfinos.
Absolutely. So just really quick here, do you have any particular exercises for our listeners out there that you would want to do either before you go out on the trail or once you get out on the trail to keep your gated horses doing their gates out on the trail and not falling back into not wanting to do them just for ease or what have you? Is there anything to kind of keep them very consistent while you're out on trail?
The best thing to do to keep them consistent in their gait is to go in small circles, have them gait in small circles, figure eights, serpentines, because when you've got them in gait and you're doing these different maneuvers, they have to be very precise with their steps. And so this helps to keep them working with the gait and makes them less likely to go into the trot. I will say that sometimes when I'm out on the trail, not often, but sometimes if I've got a horse that is just working on the gait and isn't that comfortable with the gait all the time and I'm really having to move out, I will sometimes let him trot. And you can do that really by going from the seated position to the 2-point, let them trot for a while just to change the muscles. And I personally think it's great if you've got a horse that can gait and trot both, as long as it's at your cue.
That does make sense, because there's totally different muscles which are involved in those different movements. And that's why, you know, we even say to our posting friends, right, that you have to change your posting diagonal as a rider when you're out on the trail. Otherwise, you can soar the horse. So it would make absolute sense that you don't want them to be in the same gait the entire ride.
Right, right. And, on the case of being sore, you know, I will say I've ridden 4 different Apostolfinos in competition, and the only time I've ever had a trouble with sore back, it was because I had a saddle that did not fit well.
There you go. Absolutely. Well, I would need to come to your house and ride your Apostolfinos, because I would love to experience those 3 different gates that you talked about and understand them and appreciate them more. I only had the pleasure of riding Apostle one time, and I'll be quite honest with you, based on what you said just now, I think we were doing the middle one. What did you say the middle one was called?
Apostle Quarto.
I think that's what we
likely
were doing, but I wouldn't know for sure.
Most
but it would be really fun
Apostle
to
Quarto
learn. Yes. Oh, we'll have to do that.
I would love to.
So
anytime.
One other question before we let you go. Is it smooth or bouncy, or just handling on the gate?
Well, you know, there are different qualities of horses as far as their gait goes. It's smooth, though. It really is smooth. It may look like you're kind of jiggling a little bit, but instead of the up
yeah.
and down motion that you get in a trot, it's more of a forward and backward motion. And
okay.
it's really
sense.
Very smooth.
Huh. Interesting.
Very comfortable.
Well, Teresa, do you have a website or anything, or a place where listeners can find you on Facebook? Or
I have a Facebook page, but it's just my regular Facebook page.
Oh,
I do not have
one?
A...
Okay.
I keep saying I'm going to get a website up because we do have a ranch where we have trail rides and stuff, but I just don't have my webpage up yet. I'm so sorry.
Well, give us the name of the ranch and where it's at anyway.
It's Wood Rock Ranch at Bluffdale, Texas.
All right. Wood Rock Ranch
in
Bluffdale,
Texas.
We put on trail
challenges and have people come out to ride for the weekends and things like that.
Sounds good. Well, thank you, Teresa. That's actually cleared up a lot of things in my mind about Passos, and I'm sure other people as well. Because most of us, I think, have only ever, you know, if we're exposed to it, we're exposed to the dancing kind that you talked about, the Passofino game
right. and,
at a show.
And
you know, you may
the
see a demonstration.
Paso, the show Paso is beautiful, but if, when you see that and you see all that brio, you say, well, how can I do that on the trail? Well, it just kind of depends on the horse. You can take the horse. All of the Apostles are going to have the brio and all that. Mine does, too. But if you work with the horse, and if you make sure that your horse is one that is good with that Largo, you can have an excellent trail horse in a Pasolfino without, you know, having one that looks like he's going to explode all the time. You know, a lot of my friends ride quarter horses or the more stock horse types, and they look at me on my little powder keg and they say, you know, what's going on? He's fine, and he'll I can stop him and stand there with the reins dropped and watch everything going on, and he'll be fine. But you just have to work with them and make sure that the horse knows what you expect of him.
Wonderful.
Very good. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you very much for having me on your show. I've enjoyed
it. Bye-bye.
All right. We are running out of show here today already, Christy. These always go by too quickly. Where can people find out more about the CHA, and where do they go to check that out?
Yeah, have them go to chainstructors.com, and they can find an instructor near them or a barn near them, and then from that page they can also, if they're a professional, find out how to get certified and more about our educational manuals, DVDs, and conferences.
Sounds good. And if you we want to remind everybody that tomorrow is the EquityMFG.com Celebrity Trivia Challenge here on Horses in the Morning. And this week we have a $25 gift certificate from EquestrianCollections.com for the whole universe of equestrian shopping at your fingertips at a price you can afford at EquestrianCollections.com. And tomorrow we have Leslie Wiley, our own Leslie Wiley from Horse Nation. She's with us every Monday. She's going to be the celebrity tomorrow, and she will tell you that she stinks at trivia. So if you want to sign up to have a chance to play against Leslie and to win, you just go to horsesinthemorning.com, and there's a big banner in the middle of the page. It takes a couple seconds to sign up, and we pick one lucky player every week. And I also wanted to mention a thank you to Alicia, who posted on our Facebook page a picture of her winnings. So she actually won a bunch of stuff and posted a picture of all of it and put a little thank you up there to Horse Grooming Solutions and Julie Goodnight for her prizes that she played a couple of weeks ago. So we have a lot of fun on Wednesday mornings. Be sure to join us. Jamie will be back here again tomorrow morning. And don't forget to follow. The easiest way to listen to our shows is on our app. Just go to Horse Radio Network in the App Store, either iOS or Android. It's free. It's easy to download. It's easy to use. It's the best way to listen to the shows. Christy is here every, third Tuesday of the month. So we'll look forward to having you back again next month to talk about training. If you missed the past episodes with Christy, you can listen on the app or just go to horsesinthemorning.com and take a listen there. Thanks for joining us, Christy. We'll talk to you again next month.
Thank you, Glenn and Jennifer. Talk soon. Bye-bye.